Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. The Supreme Court getting involved with leveling the playing field when it comes to e-commerce taxes. This was one of the major stories in this week's MIBiz.
Yeah, this is a case that, you know, every once in a while you see a case that just needs to get litigated and get decided at the highest levels, and this was it. So let's start off with 1992. Everybody remembers what they were doing in 1992 and how much merchandise they were buying online on their favorite website, right? No, this was something, and what this case is about is really about taxes, and that the world has changed a little bit in 26 years. In 1992, the U.S. Supreme Court decided on a case out of South Dakota. Well, that was basically about catalog and mail orders, and you make your orders by phone. And then a lot of those catalog companies were collecting sales and use taxes on those transactions. Now, fast forward 26 years later, we have Amazon, eBay, name any of the other large online retailers, and this one is Wayfair. It's out of Boston, sells home products, household goods. And the state of South Dakota a couple of years ago passed a law that said online retailers must collect the state sales tax on purchases by their customers in the state that online retailer exceeds 200 transactions per year or $100,000 in revenue from customers in the state per year. There are folks in that industry say, wait a minute, this does not jive and follow that 1992 precedent, Supreme Court ruling, that said in order for states to compel retailers, catalog, mail order retailers to collect sales taxes, that company must have a physical presence in the state. Go back to your history classes. Remember this little thing in our history classes, in our government classes, called taxation without representation. If you don't have that physical presence, the Supreme Court said, that's needed for you to have to pay taxes in that state. So that's been the rules that everybody's played by for 26 years, and now this case comes along, and it could set a new precedent. It could change a lot of things. The court could uphold this law in South Dakota, or it could do away with it, strike it down. And what is that threshold? And when online retailers have to collect those sales taxes, you have many states, I think 45, that have a law that says there's a threshold on when online retailers must collect taxes, the sales tax on the transaction. And your retailers are saying this could finally clarify everything and level the playing field. Online retailers have that competitive advantage. In Michigan, it's a 6% competitive advantage on pricing. But your online sales industry, retail industry says, wait, this is something that the Congress needs to decide. This needs to be decided at the federal level by Congress. So we don't end up with 50 different laws and 50 different sets of rules we need to play by. And that's the crux of the issue. So this is a case that was heard before the Supreme Court a couple of weeks back, and a ruling's expected this summer.
So how could this impact taxes collected here in Michigan?
Well, Michigan has the law. It took effect in October 2015 that puts that threshold. It's a click-through. First, there's kind of a two-prong. It's click-through sales, such as if you go to an online retailer and you're referred by a different website. If those sales exceed $10,000 in the prior 12 months, the retailer, online retailer, has to collect the sales tax. Or if you go directly to that website to buy something, such as Amazon, if the sales exceed $50,000 in a year, Amazon has to collect it. Now, a lot of the retailers are indeed collecting the sales tax. But what this ruling would decide is that threshold that South Dakota uses appropriate? Or first, the court needs to decide, is it still appropriate to require a physical presence in the state to compel an online retailer to collect those taxes? And then the court could rule on, if it decides, no, the world's changed in 26 years, we'll do away with that physical presence requirement, then what is the appropriate threshold? Is that South Dakota threshold appropriate, and where will the court come out on it?
Speaking of physical presence, it looks as though the state could use more angel investors.
It could. Now, these are angel investors, typically, actually high net worth individuals who put their money into companies, startup companies, and they go a little further. They get involved in them. They help to mentor entrepreneurs and help their companies and guide them along, offer the advice and that mentorship, and take an active role on the board, typically. The Michigan Venture Capital Association puts out an annual research report where it takes a look at VC and angel investing and kind of a state of the industry report, so to speak. This year, it was took a little different tack to use some data from Ann Arbor Spark, that's the Economic Development Agency in Ann Arbor, which is trying to track angel investing in the state. And what it came up with was there's about 800 people in Michigan doing this type of investing, either with a formal organization or formal investment group, such as Grand Angels out of here, out of Grand Rapids in Holland, or Muskegon Angels, and there's a group, Kalamazoo Angels down in Kalamazoo, that they're active. So between the active organizations and the formal groups, plus folks doing this individually on their own, that's estimated to be about 800 investors who are putting money, their money into these companies, these tech companies, these biotech companies, and just all sorts of sectors that are seeing investment. And that's significantly more than previously reported with just formal groups. So there's been some nice growth there over the years. And in fact, the data shows about $41 million invested by angels in Michigan last year for 37 startup companies. But as always, as Michigan goes down this pathway from what we went through 10 years ago, there are folks that say, we need to do better, we need to do more. Good progress, but in talking to Skip Sims, he's with Ann Arbor Spark and one of the angel investors in the state, he thinks there are several thousand people in Michigan who meet the federal definition of an accredited investor, and they are high net worth individuals that can do this type of investing. So what he and others are saying is the outreach needs to pick up. There needs to be more emphasis placed on identifying folks who have the capability of this, to do this, the willingness to do this, and not only put up that financial investment, but get involved in startup companies. So again, the story is, as it has been for years, nice progress made over the last decade plus, but don't let the foot up, continue to press and continue to push forward and try to get more more angel investors in Michigan who can help startup companies and help that entrepreneurial ecosystem.
And then you have the Michigan Venture Capital Association kind of saying the same thing when it comes to bringing more capital to market.
Yeah, the interest, message is similar on that side of the equation. You know, we talked here, Patrick, over the last couple of years that venture capital has been on the upswing for more than a decade in Michigan. It's doing well. You're seeing more folks investing, more startup companies. And there's a lot of data that says there's a lot more entrepreneurial activity in Michigan. And a lot more startup companies, your universities, especially your big three at MSU, U of M, and Wayne State, they're spinning out more innovations in the lab. And Michigan ranks very high compared to other states in terms of research and development at the university level in patents. But how do you get those innovations and those ideas to the marketplace? You need somebody to put money behind them. You need an investor. In Michigan last year, there were 68 deals by venture capital investors. That's $179 million. The deal flow is up from 54 the year before versus, and that was $222 million. And if you look at a kind of a 10-year window there, it's up significantly. It's up more than 2.5 times in dollar value and more than triple in the number of deals. So venture capital, again, has made a nice steady run over the last decade plus. However, there are the folks in that field that say, don't let up, we need to do better. We need to constantly be looking out and trying to get more investors who are out of state to make an investment in the state. For years, the mid-Michigan and the entire Midwest has been known as what's called a flyover region of the U.S. within the venture capital community. It's just a place that you fly over going from one coast to the other. That's been changing a lot in the last several years, as many of the states in the Midwest have seen an increase in venture capital. And when I spoke to Tom Shehab, he's the chairman of the MBCA. He also runs, he's the managing director of Arboretum Ventures over in Ann Arbor. His perspective is the folks in this industry in Michigan really need to accelerate their strategy. They need to help groom more venture capital investors within the state and keep working on that strategy to bring more attention to what's going on here and the entrepreneurial activity and the innovation so investors outside can find a deal and make an investment here and help grow those companies.
MIBiz Senior Writer Mark Sanchez, thank you so much.
We'll talk to you again.